Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next hour, another conversation related to the Binghamton Massacre. We'll look at the culture of the amazing places like the American Civic Association in Binghamton, where the shootings took place. It was one of these places where people from all over the world come to learn English and to study for citizenship exams. There are all kinds of places like that in the downstate area here and in New Jersey. So we'll talk about that. Also, coming up tomorrow, why some cities like Kansas City are doing better than others in the recession. Do we have anything to learn from Kansas City? That's tomorrow morning. A lot to listen for every morning at 10 a.m. here on WNYC. Right now, human beings are born with brains that are designed to make sense of reality. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? So how do we get from there to knocking on wood, sleeping with teddy bears even when we're grown-ups, and crossing your fingers for luck? My guest now says that these innocuous behaviors are actually supernatural beliefs, and they're not only an inevitable consequence of our brain development, but necessary for social cohesion. Joining me now is Bruce Hood. He's a professor of developmental psychology at the University of Bristol, where he directs the Bristol Cognitive Development Center, and he's also the author of a new book, Super Sense: Why We Believe in the Unbelievable. Bruce Hood, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian.
And you were just telling me in the break, after we were talking about Obama and his consortium of cognitive behaviorists, that even with all that logical rationality, Barack Obama is superstitious?
Yeah, that's right. Apparently he had to play basketball on the morning of the primaries and has continued that kind of behavior. John McCain, of course, had a whole collection of tokens that he carried around in his pocket. And even our Tony Blair had to wear the same pair of shoes every time he got up in Parliament to answer Prime Minister's question time.
Really? And you mentioned basketball. Well, athletes, I think, are famously superstitious. Who can forget Wade Boggs? When he was with the New York Yankees, he would have the same chicken dinner before every single game.
Yeah, and our various players, Beckham, of course, our footballer, just about tennis players. They're another good one. John McEnroe wouldn't stand on the white lines. Any situation where there's a degree of uncertainty, and that's often the case in sport, people try to control or at least get the sense of control by engaging in rituals.
And you write that 3 out of 4 Americans believe in the possibility of ghosts, psychics, telepathy, or some measure of the supernatural, and that goes up to 9 out of 10 if you include religious belief in that broad category of supernatural. Why do so many of us hold these beliefs?
I think they're inevitable. I think they're a product of a brain that creates the mind that seeks to find structure and purpose and meaning in the environment. And in doing so, often comes up with explanations which, if they were true, would be supernatural. So I think it's an inevitable consequence of a brain which is designed to interpret the world.
You mean religion, superstition, belief in psychics, all these things serve an evolutionary function?
Yeah. Now, religions, of course, they're kind of complex. They come from culture, so they're a narrative. They address the existential issues. You know, why are we here? Where do we come from? And where are we going? And there's protagonists. There's individuals which we, you know, form part of the religion. And this is storytelling. But every religion has a component of supernatural aspects, whether it's spirits or life after death or so forth. On the other hand, supernatural beliefs and superstitions don't necessarily have to be religious, and that's why I say atheists can also have such notions. So I don't think anyone is entirely rational, because I reckon if I had them for a day or two, I could kind of track them around and find some strange behavior.
Wait a minute. The idea of a superstitious atheist is kind of an oxymoron on its face, isn't it?
It does seem so, yeah. Well, it depends if you define belief in the supernatural as relating to God. On the other hand, if you think that you can control outcomes or that we have certain abilities, such as precognition or telepathy, that doesn't require a god, but would be equally supernatural.
And you just quoted, or I quoted some of the statistics that you give in the book about Americans and their rates of belief in ghosts and things. What about other countries? Is it that the more technologically advanced a culture is, the less likely its people are to hold supernatural beliefs?
No, I don't think so. If you consider Japan, for example, they're a technologically advanced country, and they have lots of beliefs and variety of gods. Or people who usually use the Scandinavian countries as a good example because atheism is more prominent there. Yet I don't think there's any evidence that they're less inclined towards supernatural beliefs. So religion, if that's the mode of thinking in the culture, will dominate. But in cultures where there isn't a strong religious component, then people find other outlets for their belief systems.
Bruce Hood, my guest on WNYC, author of Super Sense, Why We Believe in the Unbelievable. What superstitious beliefs do you hold, folks, that you know are irrational, but you believe them anyway? Or doesn't it work that way? If you think they're irrational, maybe you dismiss them. Maybe you have to think they're rational to hold supernatural beliefs. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or anything you want to say related to this or to ask Bruce Hood, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. And in fact, Bruce, you're right that most of us can hold supernatural beliefs even when we're not fully aware that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Even Richard Dawkins? Even Christopher Hitchens?
Oh, now that's a good one. So I will give you an example, and let's consider this. If I asked you, would you wear a cardigan, an old cardigan that belonged to someone else, and it was fully clean, most people say, yeah. And if I offered you an incentive, say $50, would you wear the cardigan? I think most people would say, yeah, absolutely. But if I told you that that cardigan belonged to Jeffrey Dahmer, then I would imagine that most people would be reluctant to touch the cardigan. Now, you might say, well, why do we do this? The thing about this example is that most people respond intuitively, almost immediately, and then come up with an explanation later on. And those explanations vary from kind of the notion that you think it might be contaminated with some biological entity. But I think that really, for most people, it's as if it's contaminated with a psychological property, almost like evil, a malevolence that has somehow become manifest in the physical world.
And you're right that the beliefs behind superstitious practices work to reduce the stress caused by uncertainty. So mm-hmm. in some sense, it's a coping mechanism.
Yes. So you find in any job or profession where there's a high degree of uncertainty at risk, maybe firefighters or lifeguards or anything where there is a real possibility that the consequences of something going wrong are pretty catastrophic, you know, people will engage in superstitious ritual.
Angela in Queens knocks on wood, right, Angela?
Yes, I do. I'm actually doing it a lot more than I used to because I have a 3-month-old baby. And if there's one thing I've learned from her, it's that, you know, the books can tell you everything in the world, but life is very unpredictable. And the best scientists in the world can't guarantee anything in life.
So you knock on wood.
Excuse me?
It's just in case, Angela.
Kind of. So, you know, sort of, you know, when you've done everything you possibly could, there's still fate and there's still luck that comes into play. And that's, you know, the last resort.
Thank you very much. Here's a superstitious atheist, Peter in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
Okay.
I'm a pretty strong atheist. I could never bring myself to believe in God. I'm an atheist Jew, so it gets even more complicated. But that being said, my superstitions, I always step onto a plane with my left foot, and as I cross the threshold, I touch something that's red, whether it's on my body or on the side of the plane.
And why do you do these things?
Someone told me that once, and, you know, as irrational as I know it to be, I figure it can't hurt. Why not? You know, the black cat walking in front of me thing, I bug out when I see that. I refuse to walk under a ladder, which obviously is a smart thing to do anyway.
Then, Peter, maybe you're really an agnostic. Maybe you're really not so sure if there's a supernatural realm.
You know, I'm pretty confident. I'm pretty confident in my convictions with that. I've read Christopher Hitchens' God is not great, and all those books that sort of confirm what I believe.
I think you've got a logic problem to present to your family at Seder on Wednesday night. But, Bruce, go ahead.
Well, Peter, you're in good company. Charles Cerveny, the co-founder of Microsoft, one of the richest men in the world, he's been taking flights up into space. I don't know if you've been aware about this. But on his first flight, one of the superstition that the Russian astronauts have to engage in, and this is a little bit gross, on the bus on the way to the flight deck, they have to relieve themselves on the back wheels of the bus. So I think that's an interesting issue. You know, here is one of the most rational, brilliant businessmen and some of the greatest technology in current day world, and yet we still feel this need to kind of just control things a bit. So you're in good company.
All right, Peter, thank you very much. By the way, Suzanne writes on our website, who said Homo sapiens are rational beings? Because we have to deal with the real world. We think, therefore we make stuff up. And I think Ellie in New Rochelle might have something to say to our last caller. Hi, Ellie.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say that you guys haven't included in the conversation that maybe there is a spiritual realm and that maybe God does exist. And that
it's really a great comment, because there does seem to be an underlying assumption in your book and the way you're describing it that none of these realms are real.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that when you look for it from a scientific perspective, if you try to measure it or find reliable evidence, it just simply doesn't amend itself to that. I mean, if we put religion to the side for the moment, if we just consider these, let's take something that nobody would get very upset about, the idea that you can tell when you're being watched from behind. This is very common. 9 out of 10 people think they can do this.
Teachers can do it. Every fourth grade teacher can do that.
But when you put someone in the situation, you try to measure that experimentally, there's no evidence that they can. And yet, the belief is so powerful and so strong. So we can't really ever prove or disprove the existence of gods and so forth. It's just that when they're put in an empirical situation, you know, put under investigation, we don't have any evidence for it.
Ellen in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellen.
Good morning. I had a very strange experience with my mother. She was in a terrible car accident, and she was in a coma for 10 months. There was an insurance settlement, and so it was a very, very complicated legal situation and, of course, very stressful. I realized that she was no longer in her body, and a friend of mine told me that probably she had exteriorized and could be contacted as a spirit. All of this was amazing and very strange to me, but my friend recommended lighting a candle, sitting there quietly, avoiding drafts and waiting for the candle to flicker and waiting for a communication. And I heard her voice very, very clearly in my mind. I explained the situation to her. She agreed to zap her body, and she said it would take 2 weeks. 2 weeks later to the day, the body expired. And I've remained in contact not only with both of my parents, but with my late husband. And they've predicted all kinds of things. They've predicted what the stock market would do. They predicted possible accidents.
And Ellen, I'm gonna leave it there because we're going to run out of time. But who's to say that Ellen isn't at least having a positive experience, whether or not you believe that it's what she describes it as?
I think this is an important point. We shouldn't ridicule or try and mock people who have these experiences. They're very real. And science at this current point in time can't deny them. So I think it's really important to recognize this is an important component.
So what do you hope to come of your book? Is it to convince people not to be so superstitious because somehow we're going to be better off? Because you basically write, and then again just acknowledge with Ellen, that some people are better off if we hold on to these things.
Yeah, I hope the book opens people's eyes to the wide range of beliefs that are out there and look towards the mechanisms which generate them, but also the way that they alleviate a lot of the stress and anxiety that we have. And therefore, they're always going to be with us. And so once we recognize that, it shouldn't be so much of a problem.
So you're more interested in understanding the evolutionary psychology of this.
Indeed, that's
than
exactly.
In criticizing it.
Yeah.
All right. And by the way, we saw in your Twitter feed that you spotted Kevin Spacey on the street last night. So you're here to promote your book, but you're having a real New York experience.
I'm having a great time.
Remember to tell you about my remind me to tell you about my Dustin Hoffman sighting one day.
Okay.
My guest has been Bruce Hood. He'll be appearing with Peter Matheson tonight at 7 at the Rubin Museum of Art. 150 West 17th Street. For tickets and more information, check out the link on the Brian Lehrer Show page. And the book again is called Super Sense, Why We Believe in the Unbelievable. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.